It's a week 11 NFL preview with the Lions, Eagles, Rams, Seahawks, and Broncos Chiefs. StreamYard changed things. They made it so like double shows appear, and I guess they muted me. Hey, it's the Shots and Tenier NFL podcast for November 13th, 2025. I'm Aaron Schatz. I'm that DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. Mike Tenier, once again, not able to join us, although at least this time it's not because he's stuck on a bus. He's got family obligations, so we're doing it it's a triple podcast. We've got guests Brian Knowles and Dan Pizzuta. Someone says Brian is the only face they can see. I can see all three. That's very weird.
I've got two windows here. One shows all three of us, and one just shows me.
I think that's whether you're on landscape or vertical, whether it shows one or three. That's a new thing now that StreamYard does, where you can do the show landscape or vertical.
No, well, just me. Well, that's just to get the ratings, folks. Let's see here. Let's see if we can fix this.
Yeah, that's. I don't know how to fix that. Hold on a second. The problem is that we're vertical with each other, so you can probably see me now. The people who only see one. This is not good content, unfortunately.
Well, when we get going, we're talking about the good games. This is more emblematic of the quality we're going to see in, like, Jets Patriots and stuff like that.
Yeah, you've enjoyed the Jets and Patriots. We have the real problem here where StreamYard changed things, and I have no idea how to fix it.
One moment.
And I'm not sure what to do because I don't know if we should just continue the show or if we should. Or we need to stop it and fix it. All right, we're gonna continue the show, and I'll edit this out of the podcast. Hopefully, I apologize to people who are watching us visually. But we have such good games. This is a shame because we have such good games to talk about this week. I have to do the sponsorship first, which is that this show is sponsored by Underdog. Underdog is available in 40 states, Washington, D.C., and Canada, and it works better than StreamYard. It is the easiest place to make picks on your favorite player stats and win cash prizes. Play your first $5 on Underdog and get up to $100 in bonus funds or entries when you sign up with code FTN. Terms apply, and as always, please play responsibly. All right, so we're going to talk about coming up Chargers, Jaguars, Chiefs, Broncos, Lions, Eagles, the DVOA Bowl between the Rams and Seahawks. But we'll start with 1 o'clock, the 6-3 Buccaneers at the 6-3 Bills. Buccaneers make the playoffs 98% of the time with a win, 93% with a loss. Bills make the playoffs 91% with a win and 75% with a loss. Some injuries, but some guys back. Bucky Irving and Chris Godwin had limited practice for the Buccaneers and may actually return. Vita Vea and Antoine Winfield also limited. Bills probably have Dalton Kincaid out and have a lot of limited guys. So there's some injuries going on in Buffalo.
Yeah, the Bills' secondary is mostly limited. Benford limited, Taron Johnson limited. That's the concern. If the Buccaneers are getting their reinforcements back at wide receiver, the Bills will need all hands on deck to stop them in the secondary, and right now it's not looking great.
Yeah, and that's probably the one thing where when you look at what the run defense has been too, like at full strength, that has not been good. So you kind of need a good secondary to be hoping that you can do anything on defense, because this has been one of the worst run defenses in the league all year. And if Tampa Bay can get Bucky Irving back even a little bit, it's going to be a tough thing for the Bills to slow them down.
Yeah, even Rashad White. I mean, the Buccaneers are 25th running the ball, but I would think that even if it's just Rashad White, they're going to be able to run on the Bills because everyone can run on the Bills. And you flip it to the other side, you get strength against strength. Bills are one of the best running games. Tampa is 4th in run defense. But James Cook is also, of course, a great receiver, and Tampa is 28th against running backs as receivers.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't... But Buffalo is also coming off of this horrendous game against Miami. Like, one of the worst offensive performances I've seen from them in a long time. They do seem to have 2 to 3 of these games every year where they just kind of forget to show up. But even by their standards, the Miami loss is baffling to me. It just didn't make any sense because it felt like the offense hadn't been introduced to one another for the game. They didn't quite understand. Like no one was on the same page as anybody else.
Yeah, it kind of feels like the Bills are running the Chiefs offense from the past like 3 years, but they don't have the defense to let them like get used to it and like get all these kinks out that they've had. So I think especially if this run game can't work, when you're getting the Bills into third down and especially third and long, like that's when Josh Allen has negative DVOA on third down this year,
which is wild.
That's not the type of Josh Allen we think of at all. And it's, you know, third and medium, third and long. And the Bills have the second lowest average yards on third down, which has helped them. But if you're getting them into these third and mediums, third and longs, like they're just not the Bills that we're used to.
The Bills, the Dolphins game, like you think the Dolphins might have an offense. It was the Dolphins having a defense that was the shock. And I'm writing for ESPN about off-season needs for teams. And for the Bills, again, I put wide receiver. Because I know Brandon Bean hates this, but people are going to be complaining about the lack of a number one receiver until they either get a number one receiver or win the freaking Super Bowl.
Pretty much.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where not having a number one receiver is fine when the offense is kind of humming, as we even saw last year. But when they are in these situations where they really need someone to go to, which they've just been in more this year, they don't have that guy. And that's where we've really seen that come out as a weakness.
I pointed out last week before the Bucs-Patriots game that you want to attack the Buccaneers on the right side of the field because Jamel Dean is having such an awesome season. And Josh Allen has been better throwing to the right or the middle than the left this year. The Patriots got their big plays, like that Kyle Williams play was on the right side. So, I mean, I guess the good thing about the Bills not having a number one receiver is there's no one that they feel like they have to throw to. They can throw to whoever's not going against Jamel Dean.
But the lack of someone you can turn to in these third and long situations is just that's their fatal flaw. And I think
Kincaid would be that guy, but if Kincaid's out, then they don't have that guy. I think whether the Bills can get pressure on the other side is a big deal. Joey Bosa actually leads the league in pressure rate, according to ESPN, but the Bills are 26th in pass rush win rate. The other thing that's interesting is Baker Mayfield against man and zone is kind of a crazy difference this year. He has 4.4 yards per play against man and 8.3 yards per play against zone.
Wow. My guess without looking at those numbers is that that's also going to be highly correlated to which receivers he happens to have available in any given week, because Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, slightly better at breaking down man coverage than some of the depth receivers I've had to turn to. That's the one thing, because I did success rate on quarterbacks for FTN this week, and Mayfield has so many failed completions in the weeks where he's been missing guys. So the chance of Godwin returning and Bucky Irving returning makes this, I think, back into that top 10 offense we saw for the first couple of weeks. And that's the worry against Buffalo here. That this is the Bucs we saw at the beginning of the year. That's the one we've seen the last couple of weeks.
If Godwin is Godwin, if he's back and he's good, and Egbuka is Egbuka, whoever's on Tre'Davious White is probably going to feast.
Yes.
Yes. He's been bad this year. The line is Bills -5.5 at home. I'm a little surprised that the line is that big given the way the Bills have been playing.
Yeah, it feels high.
Like a lot of our stats, the Vegas has a long memory and they don't overreact to the last game, but I would pick the Bucs +5.5 to cover.
It's supposed to be wet, cold, and windy, which I think does benefit the Bills a little bit. Yeah, I think that's going to benefit.
It points towards running game.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like the Bills have to win, and that's a terrible reason to put money on one side or the other, but this feels much more important for them and their future, just kind of from a vibes-based level as much as anything else. I think I kind of like the Bills to regroup, and, you know, the Dolphins game was a trap game. They lost their focus. now it's time that to show that if you are a contender, you win this kind of game. So I think I'll take the Bills, and then I know who to take seriously if they don't win.
Yeah, that's true. 5.5 just seems like a lot. So I think I would lean Tampa Bay just because of that line. You know, if it was, you know, a 2.5, which is kind of shows that, you know, these are even teams, which I think they are by DVOA. I would probably, you know, lean more toward the Bills, think of them winning. But 5.5 just feels like a real big line for this game.
Yeah. All right. The other good 1 o'clock game, I mean, not the only good 1 o'clock game, but the other one we're going to talk about is the most important game for playoff odds so far for this entire season. And that is the 7-3 Chargers at the 5-4 Jaguars. Listen to these gigantic differences in leverage. If the Chargers win, they go to the playoffs 91% of the time, and the Jaguars are at 19%. If the Jaguars win, both teams are at 58%.
Yeah, this is a game the Jaguars have to win and the Chargers can't lose, basically from the playoff perspective.
But really, the Jaguars really, really have to win. And they need to run the ball. They are 10th running compared to 24th passing. And the Chargers defense is much better against the pass than the run.
The Jaguars are 1-3 in the last four games. I mean, two of those are against Seattle and Los Angeles, so understandable. But they had that collapse against Houston. They only beat the Raiders by one. This is a team that is on fire and spiraling downwards. Going on, this is something they
not on fire in a good way. In a like, oh look, we imploded and now we're on fire.
Yeah. On fire in a actually on fire sort of way. If they don't win this, this is kind of like feels like their season to me. They have to get back on track now. They have to figure out a way to stop this skid before it gets too big. Because just the vibes, the energy you hear out of Jacksonville, they sound like a defeated team. They need to get back in the positive column soon.
Andrew Daly says the Jaguars have the worst non-rookie quarterback in the NFL. That Justin seems Fields. Like Justin Fields erasure. But I will say that it does feel like it's time to stop expecting Trevor Lawrence to be the thing we want him to be that he isn't, that he just isn't.
Yeah, I have here 29th in DVOA when not pressured, which feels not great. No. It's very hard to run an offense that way, and we'll get to another quarterback later who is worse. But it just kind of feels like there's not a lot that Jacksonville does well on offense, yeah, at least well consistently. And I think it's been very hard for them to finish games, as we saw against Houston, where they just don't have something they can rely upon, especially – you know, I would say with someone like Brian Thomas Jr. out, but when Brian Thomas Jr. has been in, he hasn't really been able to catch the ball either. So I just think there's really a lack of something that the Jaguars on offense can just consistently rely on, do well to make sure.
Yeah, they last year it was Brian Thomas Jr. Last year was Brian Thomas Jr. they could rely on, but Thomas has had all kinds of problems this year, and then he's had injuries. He's limited in practice, probably returning this week. Chargers do allow a lot of passes to wide receiver ones, but they all shut down other wide receivers. So Thomas is really important this week.
Thomas and Thomas's hands are really important this week. The drops, I know it's been Brian Thomas this year, but this has been a problem throughout Trevor Lawrence's time in Jacksonville. It's receivers being unable to catch these balls over the middle, these intermediate routes. And some of it is bad luck. Some of it is having bad receivers. But it also feels like Lawrence is not just throwing a catchable ball. He's a step ahead. He's a step behind everyone. He doesn't have any of this chemistry of the receivers that you expect someone with his draft pedigree in it to have. And we keep being told that, you know, It's going to happen. And we haven't seen it. He's now either the worst good quarterback or the best bad quarterback. And I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, I think he may have moved from one to the other.
Yeah.
Over the course of this year. The other thing I wrote down, surprisingly strong Jaguars pass rush, 8th in pass rush win rate, and the Chargers are 31st in blocking. Yet, the Jaguars could not bring pressure against the Texans last week, who may be the only offensive line in more shambles than the Chargers or Bengals. What the heck?
Yeah, that's the thing. The Chargers have no tackles left, and the Jaguars, you would think on paper, the Jaguars should be able to pressure Herbert, not let them get anything going, and yet they just can't.
Yeah, well, we'll see, because the last week, Justin Herbert at per FTN, 1.9 seconds time to throw 2.36 time to pressure, still was pressured on 40% of his dropbacks. So the Chargers were doing absolutely everything they could to not have Justin Herbert pressured last week, and he was still getting pressured. So I think there is still going to be potentially a lot of that, especially with the Jaguars' eighth highest blitz rate, 10th highest on early down. So they're going to try to bring that pressure. I think that's how the Chargers are able to handle that is, I think, going to be a big key of how that side of the ball plays out.
Andrew Daly says the Chargers mitigated an O-line disaster by throwing some good screens, and that would seem to be a good recipe against the Jaguars' blitzes.
Yeah, you would think so, but there was still a lot of pressure outside of that when the Chargers did realize that that's what they had to kind of lean on. So the non-screen dropbacks, I think, are going to be fascinating in this game.
This is another game where the two teams are very close in DVOA. I know we feel like the Chargers are much better because the quarterback has been much better, but they're actually 14th and 16th, so they're close to each other. And the line is only Chargers -3 in Jacksonville.
I just feel like even above and beyond the DVOA, the Jaguars do not match up well with the Chargers. What the Jaguars have been doing does not really attack the Chargers' weaknesses. And like I said, they couldn't get pressure against Houston. I'm not sure that they can get pressure against the Chargers despite the tackle injuries, despite how hairy they were. Because the Chargers did handle it last week. They figured out a way to make it a functional offense with some tackles they found off the streets.
Yeah, it's probably going to be that heavy screen game, which probably takes away the Jaguars being able to force turnovers like they've been able to do on defense. So if the Chargers aren't really going to play into that, I do think this is a potentially just the Chargers are able to play a little more of a ball control without, you know, running the ball, do it with a bunch of those screens. And that's probably, you know, how they keep the ball and win.
Yeah, I'll go with that too. The system likes Jaguars +3 as a like against the spread, but I think I would go Chargers both the line and for an overall win. It will make me look better. It'll make my preseason projections look better for the Jaguars to win. I think the Chargers are better. The Jaguars are kind of reeling. And if Brian Thomas isn't fully healthy and figuring out why he can't play like he did last year, that's a real problem for them. They may get Brenton Strange back. That is the one positive for them. That's a real help for their running game if they're gonna run a lot on the Chargers, but I think the Chargers are better. All right, let's move on to the DVOA Bowl, kids. It's the 4 o'clock game that unfortunately is not viewable by much of the country. The Rams and the Seahawks. Seahawks 7-2 at Rams 7-2. Both teams are basically in the playoffs. The Rams make it to the Super Bowl in 28% of our sims if they win and 15% if they lose. And the Seahawks go to the Super Bowl in 35% if they win and 21% if they lose. But I will point out the DVOA, these two teams are basically equal except for special teams, right? Seattle is a little bit better on defense. The Rams are a little bit better on offense entirely because of the running game, which is the Seahawks' big weakness where they're 21st. But these teams are very, very equal. So it's going to come down to matchups and who gets the bounces of the ball.
And the matchups here are fascinating, especially with what the Rams have been doing the past couple of weeks with their 13 personnel and their ability to not only, you know, it's been shown that they're passing out of that and getting some explosive plays by getting big, but it's helped their running game also. They've been better with those bigger bodies on the field, on the ground. And Seattle is just going to match everything in nickel, but I think they have the type of bodies to do that. Like this is what, you know, Nick Amunwari was kind of like drafted for. Like he is the type of nickel, like slot guy you want on there to be able to play against some of these, you know, bigger offensive personnel. So I find the matchups in here are just going to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, it's going to be a great chess match. The Seahawks, well, they do stay in nickel. It's the big nickel. They like bigger bodied players, and that's going to really help because there's going to be so much beef on this field, even despite nickel versus three tight end sets. It's good old fashioned power football. I'm going to love it so much.
Seahawks are 26th in DVOA against tight ends. That doesn't seem good. They're much better against middle passes than sides. So that's sort of interesting. Stafford's good everywhere. I mean, Stafford's good at everything this year. Like I went and looked, both quarterbacks are in the top five in DVOA against man and zone. Both defenses have better numbers in man than zone, but are good both ways. So these two teams are just pretty good in everywhere. E-Dog, the big dog, does say Emmanuel Forbes is going to get cooked by JSN or Shahid. The Rams are 25th against passes to the left. That is where Forbes normally lines up as the right cornerback, and he is absolutely the weakness. I thought that they were going to sit him when they traded for Roger McCreary, but so far that has not been the case.
Well, everyone's cooked by JSN this year. That's not going to be unique to the Rams here.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, there. I mean, that the outside corner has just been the weakness overall for the Rams. 26 in DVOA for receivers lined up on the outside. And even if you are now shadowing JSN or putting some more cloud coverage on him, this is the Rashid Shaheed game. Like, this is kind of what you got him for, to be able to throw deep. And these are two offenses that throw deep at some of the highest rates in the league. These are two defenses that, while they've played really well, are about middle of the pack in completion percentage allowed on these deep throws. So I think this is kind of where you're going to be testing these defenses a little bit. And as good as JSN is, having Shaheed and that actual, like, real vertical threat, I think is going to be big for Seattle in this game.
And while we're talking about receivers being available or not, Devontae Adams did not practice yesterday, does seem to be on a pace to go today, which is also going to be very important if the Rams are going to keep up here. I mean, the sheer amount of offensive firepower in this game is amazing.
I mean, just all around, these teams are, I mean, they're the two strongest teams in the league right now, according to my numbers. And I think a lot of people would agree they're very up there on the two strongest teams, and they're really good overall. The big difference is special teams, but the big weakness for the Rams was kicking. Not kickoffs, but field goals, and they do now have thicker kicker. I don't know, though. I mean, given that he was on the waiver wire, I don't know if we should expect that he's good, but maybe he's average. The Seahawks have been fantastic in kick coverage. Even if you take out that weird kick where the Steelers forgot to touch the ball, the Seahawks are the best team in the league on kickoffs.
Although the past couple of weeks they've stopped doing it. They've just had their punter kick the ball out of the back of the end zone over and over again, just because just had they've been I think they've been wanting the consistency of those returns.
Rams, you mean?
Yeah.
The Rams have stopped doing the knuckleball kicks. They've just been tucked back in. The line is Rams -3 at home, which indicates that the markets think the Rams are the better team slightly, which I think makes sense. Most other advanced metrics out there are based on EPA, and I wrote about this. The Seahawks are – there's a really interesting gap between DVOA and EPA when it comes to the Seahawks. But Rams -3. I think if I had to pick spread, I would pick the Seahawks. But I think for an overall winner, even though DVOA has the Seahawks higher, I think in LA, I will pick the Rams. I think these two teams are likely to split their two games, but I think I would say the Rams are slight favorites.
And if they don't split their two games, whoever does win them is going to be our Super Bowl favorites, probably with the MVP quarterback and so on and so forth. These two games over the next, I think it's month, I think they're playing the Thursday night game in about a month, are going to really determine the shape of the NFC playoffs.
Yeah, I feel like I want to see if Ernest Jones plays for Seattle and how healthy he would be, because I think that's going to be a very big piece in the middle of that defense and really kind of really shapes what Seattle can do, especially against the Rams team. I think I'm with Aaron where I would take Seattle the points, but lean Rams straight up.
I'm going to go Seahawks both straight up and against the spread, only because the Rams are wearing their rivalry jerseys this week, and they are terrible.
Yeah, not worthy of the DVOA bowl. We need to
talk about that. Patriots rivalry jerseys for tonight are better than the Rams rivalry jerseys.
What? A black uniform. Who? So
original. One thing that the Patriots-Jets game has on the DVOA bowl is a better uniform matchup.
Yes.
The other big 4 p.m. game, and this is the one that people thought was going to be big before the season, therefore it's in the 425 window, it's going out to most of the country, is the 5-4 Chiefs at the 8-2 Broncos. Chiefs make the playoffs 88% of the time with a win and 64% with a loss. They win the division 48% with a win and 9% with a loss. The Broncos make the playoffs probably either way, but they win the division 75% of the time with a win and only 33% of the time with a loss. So clearly, whoever wins this game becomes the divisional favorite, no matter what the Chargers do.
And if the Chiefs lose, they no longer control their own playoff fate. They could theoretically win all the rest of their games and still miss the playoffs. They have terrible tiebreakers. They can kind of only afford to lose three more games this season, and they play the Broncos twice, the Colts once, and the Chargers once. So we all, I think they're going to make the playoffs. You think they're going to make the playoffs? We all think they're going to make the playoffs. At some point, they have to start beating some teams.
The market still has the Chiefs as the Super Bowl favorites, not just think they're going to make the playoffs. They are still the Super Bowl favorites no matter what seed they get.
Yeah, well, the current 8-seed Chiefs are going to do really good there.
I will point out, by the way, running back injuries are a big story for this game. Pacheco did not practice because of a knee injury for the Chiefs, and J.K. Dobbins is probably out for the Broncos. So time to cash in that R.J. Harvey stock against the Chiefs, who rank dead last in ESPN's run stop win rate.
Yeah, that's been, if the Broncos can run the ball, that's going to be a big piece in this, because they have not been able to pass the ball consistently. And when we talked about the quarterback who was worse when not pressured, Bo Nix is just 30th in DVOA without pressure. And I think we just kind of see that he's unsettled. It's very much the opposite of last year, where he could only play when not pressured, and he was the worst quarterback under pressure. This year he's third in DVOA under pressure, but the problem is negative DVOA when you're under pressure. So it still has not been very good. So the way he's unsettled with his feet, and I think the Chiefs are going to do a lot of things just to unsettle him. They're third in the rate that they use stunts. And I think that's going to be stunts and sims. So I think they're just going to do a lot of changing the picture. I think we're going to see a lot of unsettled Bo Nix. I think we might see some turnovers. And I think that's how the Chiefs really kind of dominate this game.
You think Steve Spagnuolo does stuff like that? I don't know, man.
Nix, last year, Nix led the league in failed completions. He's still in the top five this year, but his incompletion rate has shot up as well.
Yeah.
So he's replacing some of these failed completions with incompletions. And it's better to get 2 yards than no yards. This is a deep, advanced analytical point we're making here.
I think one of the interesting things for me to flip it to the other side is the whole question of whether you should play man or zone against Mahomes. Denver is obviously a heavily man team, but there's no Pat Surtain now. Mahomes is destroying zones this year, like completely destroying them. Much better against zone than man. But if you play man against him, he'll scramble on you, or he can at least. He hasn't as much this year as you would expect. The Broncos, though, are allowing just 4.8 yards per carry on scrambles, which is second in the NFL.
Yeah, I think if you're the Broncos, you got to stick with what you do well, even if it doesn't match up perfectly against the Chiefs. You have your defense is what got you here. Stay with what you do.
Yeah, and now that you have Rashee Rice for a couple games, I think that's helping what the Chiefs can potentially do in the man zone splits. You're probably going to have that against Riley Moss a lot. And Riley Moss is an interesting corner because he's kind of one of the best at completion percentage allowed when targeted, but he has given up some big plays. So
yeah, he was dead last in coverage DVOA last year. He's better this year, but he's not great.
Yeah, so he has forced some more incompletions, and he's been fairly good at that. But when the ball is being caught by the receiver he's covering, it has gone for some big plays. So I think we might see some big, Rashee Rice, who's had like a 28% target share, I think, in the three games that he's been back. So that adds just another dynamic, especially when you add in, what the Chiefs have been able to do, being more willing to throw deep with, Tyquan Thornton and Marquise Brown, who are not the guys we would have expected.
No,
Patrick Mahomes is finally saying, yeah, I'll throw deep to these guys. But that's kind of what we've seen.
Weird. The line is Chiefs -3.5, and I like the Chiefs both spread and to win outright.
Yeah, I have to agree. I cannot. I look at the defense and I can see start to build something there for the Broncos, but that's I'm putting money on Bo Nix to succeed in the first three quarters, and I just get too cold feet to do that.
Yeah, I find it's a very difficult path for the Broncos offense to pull something out where they are comfortably in a lead in this game. So, yeah, Chiefs on both accounts.
We'll take a quick fantasy question. We're not usually good at fantasy questions, but I have a clear answer to this one. George wants to know, Luke Musgrave or Pat Freiermuth? The Bengals are like the worst defense in the league against tight ends. I can't tell you which tight end the Steelers are throwing to, but the Bengals are horrible against tight ends. So Freiermuth is your man. Let's talk about Sunday night. 6-3 Lions at 7-2 Eagles. Lions make the playoffs 97% with a win and 89% with a loss. Eagles are basically in. Lions are surprisingly higher in DVOA in all three phases of the game. The Lions are higher. Fifth versus eighth on offense. Fifth versus 13th on defense, although the Eagles are obviously coming off their best defensive game of the year, and Jalen Phillips was fantastic. And 12th versus 21st in special teams.
The concern for the Eagles, pretty much their entire offensive line is limited in practice at the moment. Landon Dickerson's got a quad. Cam Jurgens is knee. Tyler Steen's got an oblique. Lane Johnson has an ankle. I don't know which linemen are going to be out there. And the Lions' entire secondary seems to be questionable on the other side. So,
yeah, Terrion Arnold is in concussion protocol.
Yeah, neither team exactly coming in on at full health here, at least when the Eagles have the ball.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the whole Eagles thing has been our offensive line is better than whoever you are putting against it, and we are going to maul you over. And that has been a little more inconsistent this year because they haven't been as healthy. And I think we've kind of seen that. So even if some of these guys do end up playing, if they're not 100%, I do think there's still some of that. And we've just kind of seen it with the inconsistency in the run game where they just have not been able to stay as, you know, on schedule as they were at points last year. And that I think has really hurt them, put them in some more third and longs. We've had to rely on some passing a little more, which has also been about as inconsistent as possible.
Yeah. And the Eagles defense, by the way, is also weaker against the run than the pass this year. And we know the Lions love to run the ball and they're going to do Gibbs and Montgomery, and that's, you know, going to be a big deal. So I think what's interesting here is the whole Adoree Jackson thing. The Packers, part of the shock of the Packers game was that they didn't really throw on Adoree Jackson, which was like, what? Like, why? You know, that's the weakness. But I would think because Amon-Ra St. Brown is the number one receiver, but he's the slot guy. So I'm thinking Cooper DeJean is on him. So Jameson Williams probably draws Mitchell, which means they need a big game from either Khalif Raymond or Isaac Tesla, who probably will be the guys who are going up against Adoree Jackson.
And potentially, I think Jacordian Bennett has been practicing.
After. Activated, yes.
Yeah, so I think like that is something they've been willing to see a little bit. And it is interesting because after they traded for Michael Carter, they've had Bennett, who they've wanted to get in the lineup once he's healthy. They talked about potentially Cooper DeJean moving to the outside against Green Bay. 52 of 68 snaps were still in the slot. So I think we're especially against the Lions, we'll see him, I think, against Amon-Ra St. Brown when they're in the slot. I still think that makes them the best defense, even if outside corner is going to be a little weaker, but especially that cornerback two outside. So especially against the Lions, I don't think that matters quite as much because, like you said, it's going to be Tesla or Khalif Raymond who you're kind of going against. So I think you'll certainly take that alignment.
I'll be interested to see how the Lions offense looks this week, just like schematically, because Dan Campbell took over the play calling last week and it did great results. They had a lot more deep shots, a lot more. The offense felt more explosive like it had the last couple of years. And how much of that is Campbell like bringing them back to doing their core competencies, what they do well? And how much of that is they played the Washington defense, who's been allowing everyone to look great over the past month or so?
I will also point out an interesting strength against strength. Jared Goff is number one in the league in DVOA against man coverage, and Jalen Hurts is number three against man coverage. But both of these defenses are much better in man than they are in zone, so it's a strength against strength on both sides of the ball for these quarterbacks against these defenses.
Yeah, that is going to be real interesting. One thing I pulled is Eagles are weirdly 30th in DVOA against play action. I think it's because a little bit how aggressive their linebackers are kind of coming up to the line of scrimmage. So I think if the Lions kind of get back to what they've been doing, kind of running the ball, some more of that play action, I think some of those shots over the middle are going to be very big for them too.
Iceman says he feels Morton called way too many second and long runs. That would be a difference between Morton and Campbell. Again, it's hard to know after one game coming against the Commanders defense that has completely disintegrated at this point. Whereas the Eagles defense is, again, not what it was last year. You know, I'm going to be re-debating my preseason NFC's projections forever, But I was right that the Eagles defense would not play as well as it did last year, but they're looking better now. I mean, Jalen Phillips was fantastic. Now they just need to solve the cornerback problem. Obviously, I hope Jair Alexander gets his head screwed on right. I that sounded more negative than it should. I hope Jair Alexander finds a soothing place in his life. How's that? Because he decided that mental issues were keeping him from playing, so he left the Eagles, but there is Bennett and there is Carter now to go with the other cornerbacks that they have. Line here is Eagles by 2.5 in Philadelphia.
I like the Lions. I like the Lions with the points. I kind of like the Lions when outright. This might be one of the hardest games to predict the rest of the year. We could just be when you take into account their relative strengths and the home field advantage. But I think I am not convinced the Eagles offense right now. They does not feel like it's in a very healthy place. The offensive line being banged up all the way across frightens me terribly. AJ Brown has turned into a radio caller with constantly criticizing everything the offense is doing. I feel like the fact that they couldn't get anything going against the Packers all night long has me very down on them right now. I think the Lions win this one. Not maybe as comfortably as some Lions fans think they're going to win this one, but I can see them winning this by 7.
Yeah, I'd probably lean that way too. I just don't trust the Philly offense right now. And there have been games where they make that look wrong, but have made that look right for like 3.5 quarters and then it's fine. But I'm okay not trusting them until they like really give me a reason to trust them for a significant period of time. And right now they're just not doing that.
Yeah, I think this is close to 50-50, but I will prefer the Lions a little bit. It's one of the things about this being a great week of games is that a lot of them are 50-50. Seahawks-Rams feels like it's 50-50.
Yeah.
But I think I would have to favor the Lions slightly. The one thing we haven't mentioned that would worry me is the Lions guards have not been great this year, and so Jalen Carter could really wreck things. But we will see. Both teams, there's a lot of strengths and weaknesses going on here for two pretty good teams, but I think the Lions have been a little bit better this year. All right, that does it for the show, folks. Thank you so much for listening and trying to watch. Hopefully we'll be able to cut that dead space off the beginning of the podcast version, and I will get this fixed by the time we come back on Monday to review all of these games, and we won't have this weird visual problem. Dan's site, again, is Snaps and Stats. Is it Snaps and Stats or Stats and Snaps?
The first one, Snaps.
snapsandstats.ghost.io, and make sure you are subscribed to his newsletter. And Brian's stuff is on FTN Fantasy, of course, with more stuff coming tomorrow. And just as a little secret, some of his articles that have been for subscription people are going to be free for the rest of the year. So please enjoy them and come into FTN and use the Stats Hub for all the stats. That's what you want the subscription for. All the stats we've been giving you all show long. Use the FTN Stats Hub, ftnfantasy.com. All right, Monday, I swear to God, Mike will be back. Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern, to review all of these games and preview a not very good Monday night game. Until then, have a great weekend, everybody. So long. I'm Aaron Schatz. Talk to you guys later.